Hello, Marvelites. Welcome to a special episode of This Week in Marvel. I'm Ryan, aka Agent M, and this week I am delighted for you guys to listen to my conversation with Runaways writer Rainbow Rowell. Oh, there's a lot of alliteration there. That was good. Rainbow is tremendous. We got to talk to her about Runaways, about her history with Marvel Comics, about her just history of fandom, all kinds of stuff. She was a delight, and I was so happy to have the chance to chat with her and geek out about one of my favorite teams. The Runaways is so good. And if you guys are as hyped about the Runaways as we are, you make sure you check out really soon Marvel's Runaways Season 2 After Show. It is hosted by Lorraine Cinq and Angelique Roche and is debuting with the Hulu series on December 21st, wherever you get your podcasts. It's a lot of fun. We're really proud of it. Hope you guys check it out along with the new season of the show and you read all the comics and then you just go Runaways, 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 Runaways. All right. Enjoy the convo. We are here to talk about Runaways.
Yes, we are. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
And all kinds of stuff. But
yeah.
First things first, here on the show, I always like to learn about our guests and find out what their Marvel origin story is. Like, what was that thing that got you to learn what Marvel was?
My tragic Marvel backstory.
Hopefully it's not tragic.
I joke, but it's a little tragic. Every Marvel superhero has a tragic backstory. Why can't I have one?
Sure.
So my dad was a big, big, big comic book reader, a Marvel reader, actually. So there were always comic books around. My dad didn't really think comic books were for girls. They did not have access. There was a giant size Wonder Woman and a giant size X-Men that I was allowed to look at. So if you wanted comic books, you know, where would you get them? Like, if nobody's buying them for you, nobody's taking you to the comic book shop, you don't get them online. Mm. That was a different time. There was no internet. And then when I was about 13, I befriended a guy. We actually sat next to each other on the bus. And he was a comic book reader. It's the only reason to make friends with boys in 1984, 1985, got to get their comic books. I would just read whatever he gave me. And then when I got into college, I got a job at the school newspaper and I made like $50 a week and I spent it all on comic books,
yeah.
Quarter books mostly. I'd been kind of champing at the bit to be an X-Men person. And when I got into college, I just read anything I could with mutants in it. And that continued into my 30s. Just if there was a mutant in the book, I read it.
Wow. So you've had some ups and downs.
I've had a lot of ups and had a lot of downs.
That's why I asked that question, because everybody has
a
different answer. And we'll talk a little bit about some mutants a little bit later, but I love Runaways.
Me too.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And all Runaways, all the series, all the stuff, but what you and Chris...
I also love it all, right? We all love it all.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
But what
mostly mine.
You and Chris and Matt and the team have been doing is about as perfect as I could have hoped for with this iteration. This is your first Marvel project.
This is my first comic.
First comic. How'd you get onto the book?
Runaways was my favorite comic book. It's actually the book that changed the way I read comics, because before Runaways, I was a character person. So if my characters showed up in a book, I would buy that comic. As you know, that is kind of a painful way to read comics sometimes, because you're not reading for quality of team or storytelling. You're like, well, if the Beast is in the book, I'm reading it. And I read Runaways, and I just felt like something different was happening in this book. It's a superhero book, but it's a book that's never been about superheroics. And I just was so blown away by it. And that is when I was like, oh, maybe I'm going to be a Brian K. Vaughan person or an Adrian Alfona person. This might actually be a less painful way for me to read comics. And it kind of got me into indie comics, actually. Because I followed Brian K. Vaughan from there.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason I love those characters is if you've read any of my YA books, those characters are they come from sort of the same world as my characters. So they really resonated with me. They talk a lot. They have a lot of drama all the time. They're very authentic in their teenness. And so I just fell in love with them. And so Nick Lowe, who's an editor here, he purports to be an editor here. He started emailing me. And he'd read my young adult book, Eleanor and Park, which has a lot of comic book reading. He was like, I know you read comic books. Would you ever want to write a comic for Marvel? And he was floating a Spider-Man one-shot. Not even Spider-Man. Spider-Man adjacent. Spider somebody. And it did not seem real to me. If Marvel Comics contacted you and asked you, imagine, I guess you do work for them, so this isn't but for most people.
I'm not allowed to write anymore. I did one story. It's fine.
You did?
Yeah.
Was it a Spider-Jason one shot?
It was a sad Christmas scroll story.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah. Named after a Wham song. I cannot.
What? Yes. You know I'm a huge Wham fan.
It's called Last Christmas because.
Oh, well, everybody knows that. I know. One. I was hoping it was a deep cut.
It was for a holiday special. So I was like, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do this.
I love it. Christmas is really important to the Skrull people. So I'm glad you went there.
Well, he kills a guy and takes over and gets into his family. Well, sorry. But yes, Nick, he emails you.
It didn't seem real. Oh, you want me to write a Marvel comic? You know? And I just said, that sounds great. But what I'd really like to do is, Runaways is my favorite book. I would like to bring it back.
Good for you.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
That's not near. I'm normally not that confident. So anyway, and he was like, hey, yeah, let's talk about that. I've also wanted to bring Runaways back, he said, because he had been an editor on Runaways. Mm-hmm. So we started talking then, and I had a lot of commitments. I had to write a screenplay. I had two books I was committed to write.
What year was this? When was this?
2014, I think.
Okay.
And then I actually did have a crazy health thing happen, and I had all these books. And first I was like, you know, give me 6 months. And I was like, I need another 3 months. Then he came back to me, and I was like, I've got a lot going on right now. You need to give this to somebody else. And he was like, I already talked to my boss about this, and they're loving it. Let's do it. Now we have to bring back Runaways. And I was like, well, I guess you have to bring it back with someone else. And I cried. It felt like I had this dream job, and I had to, like, then step away from it. So then I kind of got through all of that, and I was lamenting to the only other person I knew who loved Runaways. I met this person, and he was a Runaways fan. And I was like, oh, you're the only person I know who will appreciate this story, you know, the sad thing that happened to me. And he was like, well, there still hasn't been a Runaways book. And I was like, that is a good point. And he was like, you should go to that guy and say, hey, I'm up. And I did. And then Nick was like, you know what? I never told anybody that you said you couldn't do it. And so we were back on.
That's terrific.
It felt super huge to me because, like I said, I'd had to quit because I was sick. So kind of coming out of being sick and stuff and getting to still do the book, it felt so good. Yeah, it felt so good.
It's a treasure.
Such a blessing.
You started out as a character person. Then because of Runaways, you started to get more connected to some creators. Did you know Chris Anka's work and Matthew Wilson's work?
I didn't. I had seen some of Chris's work, and I didn't understand colorists before working on a comic.
Matt's one of those people, though, who elevate, like, Matt and Laura, Jordy. There's a number of colorists over the last, you know, 10 years or so, just they're doing something.
Yeah, Matt Wilson's colors are sort of church-like experiences, because yeah, you think you're really like, oh, I love this book. It looks so beautiful. We're really firing on all cylinders. And then he sends colors, and you have this moment of, oh, God is real. There's the sun and light, and these characters are alive. And it's funny because if you follow Matt, he posts so much of, like, beautiful sunsets and trees. And I think, like, he's really in touch with something, this guy.
Yeah.
And Chris and I work so well together. He might not tell you that. I'm always embarrassed when I say that out loud because I'm like, I don't know what he tells people. From my perspective, we just care a lot about the same things. He's picking up exactly what I'm putting down always. And I imagine the budget for this book was 5 pennies. It was so hard to find an artist that I was like, I guess I could draw it. So it took a long time. And then Chris was on a book that ended.
It was Star-Lord.
Yeah, Star-Lord with Chip, which I read, and it was great. The timing is perfect, and he had been a Runaways fan. Now I look back on that and I think, how did that just happen? How did Chris and I just get put together? I can't believe that was just coincidence. If I work with another artist, are they going to want my texts about clothing and facial expressions? And we really like angst. So we spend a lot of time thinking about how can we maximize the pain. I don't know. I love him so much, and I love working with him so much.
Yeah, he's great.
Oh, he's amazing.
It's
you know?
One of those things where you're like, there's something working together here. Like, there's some reason why this all comes together.
I mean, really, my Runaways experience so far has felt like a lot of coincidences that just happen in such a uplifting, encouraging way.
Do you have pets? Because we have Old Lace and we have Rufus, the dino and the cat, respectively. And they're just such perfect parts of the book. And I think about what you're saying with you and Chris being on such wavelengths and just the subtle things he's doing, and it feels so good.
Oh, yeah. I don't have pets. I guess I do have a cat. It's my son's cat, and my son is obsessed with cats. And he's asked me to put a cat in everything I do. And so I told him I would put a cat in Runaways. And initially, I put cats in Runaways. When I first conceived of the cats, they were villains, and they were all going to get destroyed. And he actually looked at me across the dinner table, and he looked so hurt and said, you really are putting cats in this book after I asked you to, so they can get eaten by a dinosaur? And I was like, that's roguish. You're right. You're totally right. And so we kept Rufus. And I write a lot of gags for Rufus and Old Lace. So I don't totally forget about them. I kind of forget about Rufus a lot. Chris never forgets about Rufus in Old Lace. So often when I'm looking at pencils and inks, I'll be like, oh my God, who's petting Rufus? And what? There's all this like lounging that Old Lace and Rufus do. That's so cute.
It makes me so happy. I have yeah. four cats at home. So like, okay. I watch them together and I'm just like, oh, this is the best.
It's so cute. Yeah. yeah.
So we had an email from listener Lewis, who's from Plymouth, England.
Okay.
And he says, Gert makes me laugh.
Oh, good.
Who are your favorite runaways? And then I want to talk a little bit about the cast. Who's your favorite just to write?
Right.
Immediate answer.
To write.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a different question than who my favorite is. Gert or Chase is my favorite to write because I think they get a lot of the laugh lines. When you have a joke and you're writing a big cast, you think of like who gets that joke? If you're doing a good job, a joke can't be moved around. Only one character in the room could tell that joke. And almost always Gert and Chase, I think, have the funniest lines.
And then who is your heart my favorite?
So when we first started doing this, Chris would always be like, Carolina, my favorite's Carolina. I'd be like, you can't have a favorite because I'm a parent and he isn't. I'm like, you don't get to pick favorites. You know, these are children. We can't choose a favorite. Many readers have correctly guessed my favorite. And so like I'll say, I don't have a favorite. And they'll be like, yeah, you totally do. I love Victor. So Victor Mancha is
very happy that Victor's in the book.
Yeah. At one point I was on the Wikipedia page because you know that Marvel doesn't have a library, or if they do, I don't have access to it. I thought there would be some sort of, what is the guy from Buffy? Giles.
Yeah.
I thought that person would exist at Marvel. And if I had, you know, it'd be like, let me tell you about Runaways history. Let's look at, you know, this Dawkins book where they show, there's nobody. I have read all of their appearances, but they live in the Marvel world and I can't pull that in my head.
Yeah.
Nick, my editor, was like, you know, Google, use Wikipedia. So I spent a lot of time on Wikipedia, double checking things. So at one point I realized that Victor was not on the Runaways Wikipedia page, or he wasn't on the current team listing. Oh. And I just was like, what? What? Look at all the work we're doing on Victor specifically. Like, I wept online and someone added him to the Wikipedia page.
That's great. But I want to go through the cast a little bit
yeah.
and get your thoughts on each of the characters. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily your favorite, just what you
all
think about
right.
it.
All so, right, talk of trash about the Runaways.
Nico.
So Nico has the most Marvel Universe experience. She never really went away. When a book gets canceled, especially a book full of teens, I love teen books. So I was a big Generation X fan. I was a big New Mutants fan, X-Force. When a teen book gets canceled, it's always really sad because they're just spare parts now for the Marvel Universe. What teenagers do we have sitting around? Do we have anybody from Generation X
that
left?
That happens so often. It's
yeah,
so
how many
sad.
Runaways are still alive?
Oh, yeah.
So I feel like when Runaways got canceled, a few of the kids immediately faded into obscurity, like Carolina and Molly. But Chase and Nico stuck around a little bit, and like in really tragic ways. They went to like Murder Island to play the murder games yeah. with, you know.
Arcade and his
yeah.
plans.
So I'm actually talking about what? Arena? Avengers Arena?
Avengers Arena.
Yeah, no, Avengers Underground.
Sort of they dovetail.
Right. I've read them.
Yeah.
They're tragic if you're a big Nico fan. Yeah. So Nico is a character who's experienced more physical pain than most characters, even most Marvel characters. A lot of her character development has been in the form of physical pain. And I think about that a lot when I'm writing her. And I think about how she's endured and how dark her power has been for her. I mean, she's a young woman. And I think a lot about how that's shaped her. And so I find that I probably have my kid gloves on the most with Nico. I think a lot of her pulling her together as a character and maybe pulling back from tortured and sexy and thinking about a traumatized young woman who carries this very dark thing. I have to force myself sometimes to give Nico plot because the caring person in me just wants to protect her. And that's not really what I can do as yeah. the writer of that book. As you can tell, as soon as I start thinking about Nico, I get really careful because I don't want Nico's plot to be that she's just in physical pain.
Yeah. I like the developments with the Staff of One and
right.
some of the things that are going on. So yeah. And yeah, Nico's, she's fascinating. And she's had some really interesting stuff and A-Force and,
right.
you know, like, yeah.
The more the character's been around, the messier they are.
Yeah.
Like if you were writing a character like Spider-Man, you really pick and choose which canon you're going to consider. You can't do it all. That's not realistic.
No. All right, let's move to Carolina.
Oh, I think Carolina has in a way been the most dormant. She got sent away for a long time. She wasn't in the old book. I think Carolina is a hard character to write because she's very sweet and she is not a plot maker. I often think of quiet people because I think she's a quiet person and how they exist in a scene because they're not going to be talking all the time. So I try to write Carolina even though she's not talking because she wouldn't have something to say all the time. Mm. But certainly she's having feelings and she's a very expressive person. She's not talking, but you get her dismay. You get her fear. She's often the person in a panel who is feeling what the other person is feeling. So everybody else is lost in their own emotions. But Carolina is like, oh, that person is experiencing pain or is happy.
Yeah. And it's nice to have an artist like Chris who can convey that silently in many cases. Oh, just wonderful.
After a few issues with Chris, I think my scripts changed because I realized that I could get really nuanced in my emotions. And I could say, Gert is looking like she's thinking. And then I'll write three long sentences. And then I'll be like, do you think you can pull that off? And yeah, he can. He always can.
All right, let's move to Chase.
Oh, I love Chase. I adore Chase. I think it's too easy to write Chase like a dummy because he says what he's thinking and he's not careful at all. He can come off like kind of a dude bro. And I guess he is a little bit of that, but he's just so loving and he's so caring. And he's the oldest. So we have really, I think, taken Chase into a little bit more of a dad. I just love him. And Chris makes me love him more. He does all their outfits, the style sheets, right? And including hair. I love hair. Chris draws hair like it's an appendage. So like you can look, especially for Victor, because Victor doesn't have appendages. And Victor's hair is always emoting in a scene. It's always reaching towards someone or blowing back. And Chase and Carolina have very elaborate hair every month. And I love it.
Yeah. Gert.
Gert was so important to me. When I first read Gert, I'm fat, and I had never seen a chubby girl in the Marvel universe. She's just a main character. She's just like all the other kids. And for her to be there and not be teaching anyone a lesson about what it's like to be fat and homely, it felt miraculous to me, really. So she's always been so important to me. And Gert's sense of humor is very similar to mine. And it always was when Brian was writing her as well. I called him Brian. I've never met him. Yeah, I probably feel closest to Gert, although she's harder than I am and can be kind of cold.
Cynical, more
really
so
cynical.
Than any of them.
And she was always that way. You know, she was the first to say, like, well, of course our parents are evil, like they're adults. And so that makes her a very interesting character because she doesn't have powers. Mm. And yet she's often the person making the call for this group of kids. We know from Runaways canon that she's going to be the leader. I forget now if it's the X-Men or the Avengers.
I think it's the Avengers.
I think you're right.
I think so. It's been a while since I've read the
Yeah, me too. We've read it like 10 times now, mm-hmm. and I still forget. So we know she's got that in her, right? She's a leader. And so I always think about that. Like, she's going to be leading a crew of people who are probably much more talented, although who knows what mutations she has by then.
Yeah.
And I love writing Gert as a romantic character because she gets the guy.
Molly.
I love writing Molly. She's so unsinkable, and she's just funny. I had a 13-year-old when I started writing the book, and he's 14 now. And I have an 11-year-old at home. And so Molly, I felt like I was definitely writing toward, like, my kids. The ways that she is and the way that she reacts to things, I think, are like my own kids. And we've aged them all up.
Yeah.
We aged them all up 2 years. And so I've actually liked that. I've liked writing 13-year-old Molly instead of 11-year-old Molly. And we've really got to deal with then what happens when comic book characters grow up, when you let teen characters or child characters grow up, because often they stay children for 50 years.
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting now that we're in Fantastic Four, we're getting to see Valeria and Franklin a little bit older, which I think is helpful for those stories as well.
Yeah, I can see why not. I understand why keeping them the same age works, but...
Okay, Alex.
Oof, Alex is super hard. I think Alex is tricky because I actually really like Alex a lot. But then I have to ask myself why, because he is a villain. He has betrayed them. He's especially betrayed Nico. And when I would talk to people about bringing Alex back, it was the one character that people were kind of like, how are you going to do that? I think it's the riskiest thing we've done, actually. Much riskier than resurrecting Gert. Some people will go, you keep resurrecting Runaways. I'm like, I've only resurrected two. Alex was already not alive, but back. So I just had to kind of pick him up and use him again. My goal with writing Alex was really, how can we make him a deeper character? How can we throw a little bit more light on his motivations? How has Alex changed in 2 years? And I hope that people after this arc are glad that we brought Alex back and feel glad that we made that we tried.
I'm nervous.
Can you tell me why you're nervous?
Because I feel for the characters and for the dynamic and for the family that they are. And I don't trust him.
But how do you as a reader feel about seeing him in the book again? Because
I'm enjoying it. I think it provides for great drama. But I'm also at the same time like, when is the other shoe going to drop? Which makes me, you know, continue to be compelled into reading.
You don't want to just tell the same story that's been told a million times, even though you kind of can. So even though he's a villain, he's a kid. And I'm like, am I bringing Alex back just to kick him? I don't want to do that. Like, I want to give him the same treatment. I want to see Chris's take on him and make him look handsome and put him in cool clothes and know that we left Alex, if we leave Alex, is like a cooler character.
Sure. All right. Finally, Victor.
I love Victor. See, now I can't talk because I've got such a crush on Victor that I'm a little bit speechless. For me, as soon as Victor Mancha was part of the team, it was like he was part of the core team. I never looked at him as like a character that came on late and was going to leave early. Victor is often the person in the scene who actually wants to act like a superhero. And the rest of the kids are like, nah, I don't think so. You know how the children call things a cinnamon roll? Victor's my cinnamon roll character. Like,
I don't know what this
is. It's like the sort of character who just could come on and you go, oh. Thor in the movies is kind of a cinnamon roll. Would you agree? They're just like good and sweet. And Victor is that character. He's so tender and soft. And he's so vulnerable. Victor, you know, died tragically. He doesn't just get picked up by some trash book that nobody remembers. You know, he was in Vision.
Yeah.
And so he was part of this sort of Shakespearean story. So bringing him back feels a little bit tricky. But when I was reading Vision as a Runaways fan, I was like, ah, no. Nah, you did not just kill Victor Mancha. Nope. And so then I actually had the power to like nope him right back, you know?
Yeah, nice.
He's got beautiful hair as well.
I want to switch gears a little bit because you, Chris, and Matt, y'all had a Beast story in the X-Men holiday special this year. Why did you write a sad Hank McCoy story?
Because I'm a huge Hank McCoy fan. He's my favorite. Runaways accepted. All right, I think the sadness in Hank McCoy is what makes him a great character. And actually, creators who lean into that sadness tell the best Hank McCoy stories, in my opinion. His mutation didn't make him blue and furry. You know what I mean? He did that to himself. And then he has spent most of his life as a character having to navigate that. Sort of lamely, frankly. And so I've always loved stories that really deal with Hank looking like a monster. His personality shifts depending on who's writing him. But we're talking about a character who's often very, very service oriented. Hank has always been about like helping other people. And I'm going to cure this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to bring this person back to life. He's there to talk to Jean Grey, you know, or he's there to comfort someone. He's, you know, they wander down into the hospital room and there's Hank and they have a little conversation. I often feel like he's not the main character. He's often the person standing next to the main character in a story, you know, providing context. And so how does that feel when you go home for Christmas and you're alone and everybody else is, you know, off with their families, even their mutant families? Like, he's going back and still alone after all these years and still blue. So
in the full Christmas holiday special, there's just a bunch of like sad.
I haven't read. Are there a lot of sad ones?
Teeny Howard.
Oh,
like
no.
I was sitting in a suite at the Four Seasons waiting to do an
humble
interview.
Brag.
No.
I was sitting in a suite at the Four Seasons
waiting to do an
special.
Interview with some Spider-Verse people.
Okay.
And I'm reading my comics, you know, taking notes and stuff. And I'm just like, oh no, like I can't read this.
You're getting
right
a little verklempt even now.
Yeah?
Thinking
it's
about
really,
it.
Yeah.
All
it's,
right.
It's an interesting time of the
it's
year.
It's interesting that many people went sad.
Yeah. It's a great issue, though.
It's not interesting that I went sad. You could just like bet on that a mile away. But
outside of Runaways and now this Beast story, a little bit of Ms. Marvel, right?
Yeah. I got to do Ms. Marvel anniversary issue.
We've gotten a little bit of Marvel stuff from you. What are the other Marvel characters you most want to write?
I want to write the Runaways. I feel like I've got a lot of consistency here. That's my number one priority.
No, I want you to stay on the Runaways.
Right.
What else? If you had your druthers, like, oh,
I'm already writing the best characters in the Marvel Universe, I think, with the most interesting problems and the best dynamic. I really believe that. Like, I do not have my eyes on a more popular character. I want them. I want them to stay. I want you to read them. But in this world where I'm also writing another book, apparently I've got all the time in the world in this scenario.
Yeah, why not?
I mean, I'd love to write Hank again. I love Beast. And I feel like he's a character that you can do a lot with.
Revive Amazing Adventures. That was where he got blue the first time. That
oh,
was
yeah,
his, like,
yeah, you're right.
Quote unquote solo
out.
Book.
You're totally right.
Yeah.
I loved Chamber. I like Jubilee. I like Nightcrawler. I kind of like anyone who's blue. I'm really into blue. I sort of would like to write the X-Men, but it's a little bit, where do you even start? I'd be like, okay, give me a year. I've already read tons. I've already spent 10 years reading X-Books, and I'd need another year of full-time reading X-Books. I know that creators don't do that. They just dive in. And there's a part of me standing on the edge going, well, that was irresponsible of you. You didn't read every appearance.
So some people do dive in. Like you, I talked to like Donnie Cates or Matt Rosenberg, mm-hmm. and they're just like fanatical in their research, which is great. But you can go both those ways.
You know, I don't know why you'd go the other way. That's the Hermione in me speaking. Yeah. You're picking up a book because you love the character. You want that character to behave as you know them. Yeah. They can move a little bit, but you want them to recognize the soul of the character.
Yeah. As someone who lives and breathes Marvel comics and continuity, I like it.
Who else? Oh, She-Hulk. I love She-Hulk. It's probably bad luck to say all this out loud. Thanks for bad lucking me.
I'm okay with it.
Okay.
You had mentioned Comics Connections and some of your books. I saw that there was an amazing piece by Kevin Wada for Wayward Son, right?
Yeah.
And Noel Stevenson is...
Noel Stevenson has done a book cover for me.
Yep, mm-hmm. which was really cool.
Fangirl.
How much fun is it for you to like combine your love of comics into your work as a novelist?
I'm so drawn to different artists and I have a desire to work with them. So I've been really fortunate in that my publisher, St. Martin's Press, has been open, like Noel Stevenson. That's the only time I like put together a pitch where I was like, there's this artist. I think she's a genius. I think she just she would represent the spirit of this book. And she was still very, I mean, she's already doing amazing things. Noel has not had a period since she was 12, probably, where she wasn't doing amazing things. You know, we could never get her to do that cover now, probably. So I was so fortunate that my publisher has been open. And so I was a Kevin Wada fan. And we were redoing the Carry On, my fantasy book about the worst chosen one who's ever chosen. And my publisher was like, yeah, let's try to make it work. And of course, he did do the paperback cover, which is amazing. It's amazing. And he's...
Yeah, Kevin's art... flabbergasted by every time.
So beautiful. I used to work in advertising and I would end up pitching illustration and it became like this joke that whenever I was pitching a campaign, I'd be like, and we're going to go with an illustrator. And they're like, of course we're going with an illustrator. And I feel like that just has been part of my path. Like, I just want to work with artists. I just want to work with really great artists.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it is cool.
Finishing up, for our listeners who are familiar, obviously, with Runaways, but may not know your prose work, what's Wayward Son about? How does it connect to Carry On, to Fangirl? Carry On, Wayward Son, yes.
You like that?
Yes, okay. Very good.
Okay, so if you are like, I like Runaways and I'd like to read more of Rainbow's writings, I write books about adults and I write books about teens. My books about teens are closest to my Runaways work. Eleanor Park is probably my best known book. That's a book that's set in 1986, I think. And it's about two 16-year-olds in Omaha, Nebraska who fall in love on a school bus reading comic books. So maybe start there. My character in Fangirl writes fan fiction about a fake series of books. She goes to college and loses herself and finds herself and is a famous fan fiction writer. And I enjoyed writing that fan fiction so much that I thought, all right, I've already created this whole world and I've created the system of magic and I've got all the characters. What if I wrote my version, not the fanfiction version, but what if I wrote like my chosen one story? So Carry On is that. It's about Simon Snow, who is the worst chosen one who's ever been chosen and who falls in love with his roommate, who he suspects correctly is a vampire. And I love those characters so much that I've got a sequel coming out next year called Wayward Son. And I didn't plan that. The first book was called Carry On. And then I thought, well, it'd be funny if this next book was called Wayward Son.
Very cool.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Thank you for giving me an opportunity to talk about them.
I planned on it. All right, Rainbow, thanks for being here.
Hey, thank you for having me. This is super fun.
Yay. Read Runaways.
Read Runaways.
I'm Ryan, and this is Marvel in your universe.